Hello, Kieran here. In typical brilliant Musty Matches timing, we managed to record this episode a whopping 10 hours before it was announced that Kazuchika Okada is leaving New Japan Pro Wrestling, so that's why we don't talk about that particular bit of news. We, of course, wish him well in the rest of his career and hope he doesn't end up in NXT. Thank you very much for listening and enjoy the show. Hello, and welcome to episode 90 of Must See Matches. I am Kieran Lefort, and joining me as always, the man behind Must See Matches, Mark Buckley. Mark, how's it going this week?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. It's been a bit cold. I've had to defrost the inside of my windscreen multiple times this week, but other than that, I'm good.
When we're done here, I have to go and put my bins out. And give me one moment. Let me just do a little bit of checking. Yes. Tonight it is going to get down to -5.
For many of our listeners in various parts of the world, that isn't a lot. For us Brits, we're not used to that kind
of
cold.
That's more than enough, thank you very much. And I know America measures it differently, but let me tell you, anything where you're in the negative numbers is bad. So, we are here to discuss Kazuchika Okada versus Kenny Omega. No time limit, 2 out of 3 falls. New Japan, Dominion, June the 9th, 2018, in Osaka Joe Hall, 11,832 advance complete sellout. The major arc of the story to this is, going into this match, they are 1-1-1. They have each won a match, and there has been one draw. At Wrestle Kingdom 11, on January the 4th, 2017, Okada beat Omega in what was, until Wrestle Kingdom 15, the longest match in Dome Show history at 46 minutes and 45 seconds. On June the 11th, in the main event of Dominion, they go to a one-hour draw, which we covered on episode 42 with Rich Fan. And on August the 12th of 2017, Kenny puts Okada away in just under 25 minutes, of a 30-minute time limit to win the B block of the G1. To kind of round out the major story points, on May the 4th, 2018, Okada calls out Kenny and says he wants to go around with him again, this time with no time limit. And Kenny says to really be sure of who the better man is, it should also be 2 out of 3 falls. According to the pre-match video, this is the first time in a decade the IWGP heavyweight title has been defended in a match with no time limit and the first ever 2 out of 3 falls match for the title. If Okada wins, it will be his 13th successful defense since winning the belt from Tetsuya Naito at Dominion 2016. Having 12 successes is already an all-time record, beating Tanahashi's 11.
Well, this was the reign that where he beat all the records. This is the reign where he overtook Tanahashi for the most days as champion. This was the reign where comfortably the longest reign. So the longest reign before this was like in the 400s.
Yes.
Okada's reign lasted 720 days.
And if you're doing the maths, that's a spoiler for the finish.
Sorry.
That's all right. I mean, we're talking about things that happened in the past. You know, we should be able to talk about these matches in their entirety. I don't think anybody listens to these to find out who won after an hour of us talking.
The interesting thing is this entire feud of Omega versus Okada is completely framed within that title reign.
Yes.
So when Okada won the belt at Dominion 2016, mm-hmm. That was when Kenny Omega lost the IWGP Intercontinental title. And from that point onwards, that was Omega heading towards like heavyweight champion challenger level.
Yes.
That was his, can you be a mid-card champion? Okay, now you're going on. The other interesting thing, I was looking at stats on this title reign.
Right.
Because you talked about how Okada and Omega was the longest match at that point at the Dome.
Yes.
You talk about how they went to an hour-long draw at the previous G1. So Okada's first title reign, the average the longest match, 28 minutes.
Mm.
His second title reign, the longest match, 35 minutes. The third title reign, the longest match, was 36 minutes. But the average was half an hour. this title reign, the average was 38 minutes. 10 out of the 13 defenses were over 30 minutes long. This was the title reign where they're telling the story.
Mm.
Okada has stamina. Okada yes. matches go long. So this is...
Also, if you like, it also can tell the story alongside that. It's taking him slightly longer to put people away. So the standard yes. competition is also getting better.
Yep, which would explain why the better wrestlers have the longer matches and the likes of Farley and Evil are much shorter matches.
This one also massively skews the average, I would think, for this reign.
I mean, 20-minute Bad Luck Farley matches are way too long for a Bad Luck Farley match anyway.
Yes, absolutely. Quickly, regarding this show, Dominion, skipping to the end a bit, this was voted the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Show of the Year. It's a 9-match show. The only match that didn't score a minimum of 3.25 stars in the Observer was Dave Finley and Juice Robinson versus Jay White and Yoshihashi. And it features the first of only 2 appearances in New Japan by Rey Mysterio Jr.
It also features the likes of Naito versus Jericho, Hiromu versus Will Ospreay, and the only time the Young Bucks won the heavyweight tag titles in New Japan.
Yes. So Kenny gets a silly entrance video where memories of the previous matches with Okada and his expulsion from Bullet Club are causing his brain to short circuit. Then Kota Ibushi is magically born from a glowing white feather, don't ask, and the memory of their reunification gives Omega the power to go to the ring.
I like they don't trust Ibushi to move his lips during this video.
I was watching that from a production point of view. Like, they were very clearly never in the same room at the same time.
Oh, okay.
And the one close-up shot they have of just Okada, they shoot from the wrong side of him. So he and Kenny end up facing the same direction when they should be facing each other. Anyway, Ibushi is in Omega's corner. Gedo, of course, is out with the champ. Also at ringside, one Tomoyuki Oka, who you may now know as the Great Okan.
I watched the G1 match, which is the shortest between these two, between my first watch and my second watch. And what's interesting is the last time they faced off, Omega was still more or less in heel mode. He had his leather jacket.
Mm-hmm.
He had his dirty black hair with blonde highlights.
Yes.
Here, the jacket is gone. The hair dye is gone. This is a more natural, more himself Omega in terms of how he's presenting himself.
Plugging something that a previous guest is responsible for, have you heard the How to Kenny Omega episode?
I have, and I actually found that really fascinating, hearing their perspective, especially in terms of how they perceive even Omega as being like a video game character in ways of having like those tell motions before he does moves.
Yes, and also you talking about his hair reminds me of Joe realizing that his hair gets lighter the more of a baby face he becomes. In New Japan.
Yeah, that actually twigged me to think, hold on, let's pay attention to that.
Yeah, lots of people don't like Kenny Omega, but he thinks a lot about what he does.
That episode of How to Wrestling is actually really interesting.
Yes,
I enjoyed
that
a lot.
I had forgotten that this was in Okada's trousers era. Actually, fashion-wise, this is neither guy's best look, as Kenny appears to have a Metro map on his tights and weird spacing on the lettering on the back, so it looks like his name is Komega. You can immediately tell they're going to go long because it's 55 seconds from opening bell to first contact.
Mm.
You can also tell this is a big deal because they've wheeled out Masachono for commentary.
Yep.
It's all basic but very well executed chain wrestling for the first couple of minutes with quite a strong Kenny chant. And the hype video that I kind of dunked on before showed really well how he'd put the work in, starting as a junior, the junior tag run with Kota, the US title, the IC title, the draw a year ago, and that he's fluent in Japanese. Like, they've really sown the seeds to get people behind him.
And in terms of being behind him, as you mentioned with the chant, Omega is the dominant chant throughout this entire match.
Yes.
The crowd are... They are here for him. They are here for this to be his time.
Yes.
And I think the thing that sums it up the most, so he has Ibushi, but Ibushi is not doing the Young Bucks trying to get the fans involved bit. Ibushi's just there as a second. So when Omega goes for the dives, Omega doesn't need to pound the mat once because the fans
are... Yes, I had that
noted,
like the Terminator claps start organically.
Yeah.
There is a bit during the first fall where one guy tries to start an Okada chant and is instantly drowned out by mostly women chanting for Kenny.
That happens a couple of times where there's a couple of different times where the chant starts as Okada and it's just drowned out.
Bang on 5 minutes, a lockup puts Kenny in the corner and Okada does his patronising fake out and pat routine, which Kenny reverses and does the same thing to say, I know your game and I'm on your level, champ. Yep. The action speeds up and they do a load of avoiding each other's signature stuff, culminating in Okada's only way to escape one winged angel being to tip them both over the top rope. Kenny gets booted over the railings. Okada goes for the big running crossbody, but Kenny's there to meet him with a leaping knee. The replay on this looks great because not only did poor Okada take that knee right in the arm, he then lands on his elbow on the concrete floor. It looked like it sucked.
And Okada did that move in the G1 match and Omega didn't counter it. So again, this shows the kind of, even though that is a match that most people will forget about, that is the kind of level of detail that they're playing into, that they're playing off that.
Yeah, but in general, it's a move he does a lot and is very rarely countered. Like, all of his big matches have this in.
Oh, yeah. I forgot by this point that he was doing it more regularly. that's the problem with New Japan. You forget when people are doing things when. Like, yeah. I caught myself for about 5 minutes thinking that Balloon Okada and Money Clip Okada were at the same time, when they are definitely not.
Yeah. At the 10-minute call, Kenny is firmly in control, basically just kicking the shit out of Okada on the map. You could kind of say he's working the torso maybe once he gets to the camel clutch, but it's mostly just like an indiscriminate wear down.
Yeah.
We have often used the chop that sounds like a gunshot cliche on this show, and I'd say it's warranted. About 13 minutes into this, there is a chop from Omega's big old Winnipeg shovel hands that we have discussed before that makes a noise like I have never heard a chop make. Oh my God.
Yeah, he's not only is he getting noises out of regular chops, he is doing chops to between the shoulder blades that are sickeningly sounding.
Yeah, so this one across the chest, like the shock wave hits every wall in Osaka Joe Hall and comes back. Okada sells it like it's just collapsed his lung and just falls into the ropes. And Kenny, no mercy, just gives him a follow-up right across the back of the neck. Okada makes some sort of comeback eventually with a flapjack, his patented running flying back elbow, and the move I've never liked, his awkward DDT, where he kicks them in the stomach with his right foot but then has to get their head under his left arm to do the drop.
Yeah, I get that.
His DDT sucks. Kenny escapes the Cobra Clutch by leveraging Okada to the floor, but has his plancha dodge and gets hit with one. There's another small flurry of action in the ring where a Frankensteiner sends Okada back outside. A baseball slide puts him over the barrier and Omega just flattens him with a springboard crossbody. They go back inside. Kenny hits a flying knee, second time of asking, but Okada holds the top rope to counter a Poison Rana, which I really liked.
Yeah, love that.
And plants him with a really nice German suplex. 20 minutes in, Okada wins a struggle on the top rope, but when they come back down to the mat, Omega basically just slugs him in the mouth and decks him. Kenny then tries to repeat the Dragon Superplex spot from the Dome match, but Okada drops out to the apron, drags him over too, and with the commentator yelling, Chotomati, 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 like, wait a minute, spikes him with a tombstone on the apron. The next thing is, Jesus Christ. So Kenny gets back on the apron and Okada hits him with a shotgun dropkick, like a full sprint from the other side of the ring. The only thing that stops Omega ending up in Chono's lap is the barricade, which he hits extremely hard with his ribs.
You say ribs. I mean, it probably is ribs, but also it's almost like kidneys position. I mean,
it looked like rib singular, like he managed to take all of it on one rib and he makes some horrible noises when he's selling on the floor. And I'm not sure how much of a sell it was.
Yeah, for me, that spot is kind of the turning point of the first fall.
Yes.
Because this is where Okada has seen a weakness and he capitalizes.
Yes. So when they're back inside, he does the diving elbow drop. Pause for maniacal grin, I wrote. Rainmaker pose, and it's almost lost because it's in the extreme wide end of the Rainmaker zoom. Omega leaps up to his feet and whips him over with the Snapdragon suplex.
I actually really like the fact that it is during that, because it's kind of playing on Okada's hubris, and it doesn't matter that it's missed.
Yes, it's also showing that Omega is the one strong enough to break the routine.
Yeah.
Like, Okada has this pat hand that he runs with, and Okada and Omega knows what all the cards are.
Yeah.
Okada falls outside, and this is where, with no prompting, the crowd start the Terminator clap. The shot of Kenny hitting the flip dive is amazing. It starts low behind Okada and then raises up to reveal Kenny at the perfect moment as he's at full extension clearing the ropes. Then he slams into Okada and almost bounces off him into the cameraman. I wrote perfection.
Yeah.
Everybody involved in filming wrestling needs to watch the 2010s golden era of New Japan.
Oh,
even
definitely.
Some of the 2019, nobody does it like that crew. One of the things I really like about this match is it is impeccably shot. Kenny comes back in with that sniper dropkick to the back of the neck off the top rope that I believe we talked about in their previous match. And there's an incredible sequence where Okada escapes the one-winged angel. Kenny blocks the Rainmaker by kicking the arm, hits a V-trigger, and when it looks like Okada's going to avoid a second one-wing angel, drops him into the Kreutzwrath German suplex. And I had to rewind this a couple of times to make sure no part of Okada touches the ground when he comes off Kenny's shoulders, into the waist lock, into the suplex. His feet are at Kenny's knees. He is not helping him at all. This is nothing but Kenny Omega core strength.
One of the things I like during this part of the match, in the first fall after the landing on his ribs, is Omega makes every cover as tight as he can. He's really working on these covers because he's kind of, I'm in trouble, I need this first fall quick.
Okada gets out the one winged angel again, hits the dropkick, and does that defiant scream to the heavens we've seen before. Kenny ducks the Rainmaker, though, hits the rain trigger, the ripcord knee strike, and pins Okada so that none of Kenny is touching the ground. He has all his body weight pressing down on Okada. There is, in the Aki wrestling games, there is the powerbomb in sliding pin, which is a folding powerbomb, and then your guy goes up kind of into a handstand in the jackknife clutch.
Yeah,
that was pretty much what this was. Champ still kicks out, though, obviously. Ghetto freaks out at ringside. Like, he realizes that he's in trouble. His charge is in trouble. We're getting to around the time where Kenny managed to pin Okada in the G1. In a move that must be extremely difficult, Okada, who's a big lad, counters the Tiger Driver 98 into a Hurricanrana.
Oh, yeah.
And has the most maniacal face on him as he pulls Omega in for the Rainmaker. Kenny, though, crucifixes around the arm into a sunset flip, but Okada hooks the legs and basically goes full bulldog, leaning all the way forward, scoring the first fall at about 28 minutes and 40 seconds. My one note on this fall, this would be a perfectly good self-contained match.
Yep. The main reason I watched their G1 match was because I thought this would be a perfect G1 match. And I was like, so how did they wrestle their G1 match? And that G1 match was very different. Like, it has a lot of wear down holds that you wouldn't expect in the middle third, because that structure was the opposite of this match's start, because they just went all in, balls out from the very start. Like, immediately within 30 seconds, you had a Rainmaker and a one-winged angel attempt. So it was interesting comparing the structure. For me, I really like this fall. I like the story. I like the change of direction as soon as Omega got injured. The last tombstone that Okada hit before he pinned Omega, I've never seen someone fight in a tombstone like Omega did in that. He was just constantly moving, and it was a sense of Okada finally got it. And they actually did a rainmaker pose when Okada was on his knees immediately afterwards, which I loved because it's the kind of, it's almost like Okada saying, try and fucking counter that, mate.
Yeah, one of the things that a lot of people don't talk about, I think, when they're discussing Okada and talking about his matches is that character has an ego and a big one. Like, he is portrayed as, like, the baby face and just, like, you know, he's an amazing wrestler. But that character likes being the rainmaker, likes having money, likes having the fast cars, likes his lifestyle. Like, and he knows he got it because he got all of that because he is the best.
Yeah.
And now someone else has come along who is also claiming to be the best, and other people are saying is better than Okada, and his ego doesn't like that.
Yeah. And also, bear in mind, he's got the first fall, but he's done it with a flash pin. And I can't remember if Okada was already using this regularly, because this would become his regular flash pin,
right,
more or less. So, like, Tanahashi has the Samson Clutch.
Mm.
Hiroki Goto has the Goto Shiki. Naito doesn't use
it. I love that, by the way. That's such a great hold.
Yeah, it really is. Naito has the jackknife pin, although he doesn't use it as much as the other guys use theirs. Mm. Zack's got the European Clutch. It's weird that New Japan is now in a position where they actually have a lot of guys that use flash pins.
I mean, it's good. We talked about it before. You know, like, a match doesn't have to end with the finisher, does it?
No, not at all.
So we get a 2-minute rest period, and then the bell rings, and Kenny's charge and flurry start fails pretty quickly.
Yep.
He gets drop kicked off the top to the floor, where he takes a beating. Okada is going for the ribs. When it looks like he's going to get something with a moonsault off the inner railings, Okada just shoves him across the 6-foot gap into the outer crowd barrier and then gives him the draping DDT on the ringside mats. We get some quality titty mist when Omega lays in some chops back in the ring, but he's quickly snuffed out by a big boot to the face when he tries a running attack.
Yeah.
Kenny breaks the Cobra Clutch with a stunner, then hits a back suplex in the ring and one on the apron before dumping a table on Okada and hitting the whole pile with a diving stomp off the apron. Unfortunately, he doesn't punch a hole in this one. Yeah.
But what I like is that I don't know if it's separate to Okada selling the stamina, but it kind of comes across also that Okada's more winded and starting to struggle at this point. And I like the logic that Okada has essentially just driven all of the wind out of Okada with that double stomp. So it really plays well into the second half of the match.
Mm. Okada wings Kenny into the post to get back on top, but Senton's only knees when they're back inside. He does, however, escape You Can't Escape and hits Heavy Rain and another shotgun dropkick instead. The pace here has very much slowed, and it's a lot of one guy hits a heavy move, but his second is foiled, reverse, repeat, and then lots of heavy selling on the mat in between.
Yeah.
Omega comes back with a cross-legged brainbuster off the top rope that looked no fun for anybody involved.
Mm.
This time, Okada cannot, in fact, escape the Samoan crash part of the You Can't Escape, but gets his knees up on the moonsault part due to Omega pausing due to tiredness and cumulative damage in between. He then clatters into Kenny with a diving European uppercut straight out of the Claudio Castagnoli playbook.
Yep.
Okada points at the table outside and is clearly looking for a repeat of that insane backdrop over the top rope through the table. But Omega counters, and after ducking under a couple of swings, connects with a running tornado DDT.
Oh, that is fantastic. That's one of the best running tornado DDTs I've ever seen.
I of course, we'll plug it at the end. I have a podcast about the FWA in which I see a lot of Doug Williams' 2001 matches, and that is his finish in 2001, the Revolution DDT. Yeah, running tornado DDT. Yeah, we get, I think on the next episode, we will get to see him win with the Chaos Theory for the first time and the transition of this DDT into being his secondary move. Anyway, Kenny threatens a German suplex and a dragon suplex off the apron through the table. And after Okada knocks him off, the one-winged angel, but Okada slips out, misses a rainmaker and gets taken down with a poison rana on the floor.
What I liked about this, so this sequence where they're essentially doing a finisher counter sequence on the floor, it's kind of made me think that these guys are treating the finisher counter sequences like automatic reactions. Like,
yeah,
as soon as one guy goes for a big move, I have to counter, and therefore it has to be. So it kind of gives credence to why you keep getting these sequences throughout the match. As I like to call it, it's Pavlov's Poison Rana.
Yeah, I'm going to be using the phrase counters slash ducks the Rainmaker a lot. Yeah. Omega, it seems, is quite happy to even the score by count out, but Okada slips back in at 19, straight into a flying knee to the temple.
Did you notice how he did the Kobashi versus Sasaki apron slip at almost exactly the same moment?
Yeah, yes, I did. Okada, after taking this massive knee, turns the one-winged angel into a spinning tombstone, but Kenny steps under the Rainmaker and plants them both on the mat with a massive uranage.
Yeah.
In the mandatory strike exchange, Omega seemed to have more to them, and he wins when he employs the Snapdragon suplex. He then walks right into Okada's high drop kick, but almost immediately comes back with his own. The height on the replay of this looks amazing. He practically leaps over Okada's head and has to kick down and pretty much just slams a heel into his nose. The director, as much as I praised the cam work earlier, is caught napping, and we come out of the replay and both men are in midair with Omega countering another drop kick into a leaping Liger Bomb.
There was a couple of moments where they kind of missed things, and it was like the senton where they got the knees up. Again, it was like just focused entirely on Omega, so you missed what Okada was doing until he fell into shot.
Poor old Red Shoes gets very confused. He is counting a pin that is not happening as Omega rolls backwards out of it and then slams home a knee strike. Okada backdrops out of another Tiger Driver 98 and they end up in the same clutch that ended the first fall, but Omega kicks out. Hits the V-trigger, hits the Tiger Driver 98 properly, but is too tired to hook the leg on the cover. He gets his arm underneath Okada's knee, but doesn't pull up on it, so Okada is able to kick out. Omega hits another V-trigger while Okada is on all fours. The shot for this is great. It's right down by Okada's head.
Yeah.
And you see Kenny just fly in and smash him. He hits the one-winged angel and ties it up at one fall apiece.
That combination of Tiger Drive 98, V-trigger, one-winged angel, that's what won Omega the G1 match. That exact three-move combination.
I see. For the entire two-minute rest period, Okada doesn't move.
Yep.
He just stares glassy-eyed at the ceiling. So that tells you if there were no rest periods and Kenny just covered again, he's won.
Exactly.
Gedo has to be ordered out of the ring so they can restart. Like, he's really worried about his man. And it really helps get over that the one-winged angel is a killer move. Okada has just about sat up, the bell sounds, and Omega slams into the back of his head with another flying knee. I have no idea, and I mean, I assume he didn't. I'm just going to say, I have no idea how Okada got out of this match without a concussion. He gets smacked in the head so much.
Yeah.
Omega knows if he can hit the one-winged angel again, it's all over and he's the champion. Okada, though, slips out and finally hits the Rainmaker, and the crowd explode.
And the way he hits it is the long collapse from the momentum, which is really feels like a callback to the Dominion 2017 match towards the end, where I think that was like the last move or second to last move of the entire match.
Yes. So I think the end of that is he hits it, but they're too far apart for him to get a cover. Here, he doesn't have any time limit and he's closer, but his cover, though, is just a hand on the chest. And Kenny has a shoulder up long before the three. It's here in the third fall where I really noticed the repeated use of an awesome camera angle. It's low, underneath the bottom rope and super wide, so you see the full width of the ring, you see everything the wrestlers are doing full length, and you see the lights of the domed ceiling of Osaka Joe Hall.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, they keep going back to this, and it's great. At the 50-minute mark, yes, that's where we've got to, they're fighting over a tombstone that neither one will let the other have. So Okada gives up and just double hammer fist Kenny in the back of the head.
So that fight, I really liked how it played into the story of the match. It was 45 seconds long, and it was only slightly ruined by Red Shoes doing a bushwhacker walk impersonation in the background.
Oh, boy. Omega tries defiant slaps, but he can't stand up to Okada's uppercuts and only avoids a drop kick because he collapses into the ropes. Mm. When Kenny can't get Okada up for a powerbomb, he resorts to these driving palm thrusts across the back of the head.
Oh, they're sick. They're just nasty.
Like, he's barely pulling them. It's gross. They're the kind of thing you were taught in a self-defense class. He lifts him up higher on the next attempt, but Okada starts punching away when they get to the apex. He tries for a hurricanrana again, but Kenny hangs on, looks down, sees Okada is upside down with one of his arms behind Omega's leg, steps over the other arm and hits him with a style clash.
I'm going to jump in here.
Yep.
This is the best Bullet Club member callback to a former Bullet Club member in the entire run of the Bullet Club.
I mean, just the mechanics of this are so good. Even before you get to it being a Bullet Club leader callback, the finisher of another Westerner who endeared himself to the New Japan audience, and that it's a move that has previously beaten Okada for the title.
Yeah.
I love the crowd roar when he pauses before the drop and they realize what's going to happen. Yeah. And then they chant four beat Western style for AJ Styles afterwards.
And it's such a natural, because it is like, this is not,
it's so organic.
I am not going for this move. This is a case of, I'm in this situation. I know a move that can capitalize on this situation. And
it's the look down, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like when he realizes like one of the arms is already in the right position, all he has to do is take a step.
Yeah.
Like if Okada's arm was the other side of Kenny's leg, he wouldn't have done this.
We've seen dozens of guys do the Styles Clash because they're a Bullet Club guy. We've seen dozens of guys doing the Bloody Sunday because they're Bullet Club guys. I'm sorry, all of those can jump out the window. They can, you can throw them on the scrap heap. This is the one that is absolute perfection.
Yeah, it's tremendous stuff. Okada is on his knees in a corner, slumped face first into the middle buckle, and again, Omega slams in with a knee. He can't get him up for the one-winged angel, though, and collapses. He gets him up with the help of the ropes, but Okada slides out into tombstone position. Omega reverses that, slips his arm through Okada's legs, and hits Ibushi's Rokutanashi bastard driver instead. He crawls over Okada's body after the kick out for some counsel with Kota, who advises him, well, you've done that, now go up for the Phoenix Splash. Like, this is the combination that has been a winner for me many, many times before.
And this is why you don't take advice from Kota Ibushi.
Well, apart from the fact that Okada rolls clear, you could not ask for a better looking Phoenix Splash.
Yeah, the form
especially
is
especially out of someone who has already been wrestling for almost an hour. It's so pretty, and he gets incredible height on it. Okada drills in a drop kick to the back of the neck, but is answered with three more big knees, catches a fourth, gets a couple more drop kicks in, and the Rainmaker, but there is nothing behind it, and he collapses long before Kenny does. They just about make it to their knees to avoid the double knockout, but their strikes are just, they're just languid until Kenny finds the energy for a big slap, and this great headbutt that Okada takes perfectly.
Okada takes it perfectly. Omega sells it perfectly.
Yeah, like the heads make contact and Okada goes down like he's got a metal plate in his head and someone has just turned on an electromagnet under the ring. Like he snaps down to the mat. And yeah, you're right. Omega sells it like this possibly wasn't the smartest idea he's had in the past 60 minutes. He pulls Okada up, but steps straight into two Rainmakers.
Yeah.
But Okada can't follow up, and we get this awesome shot of a dazed Omega sitting up in the foreground as Okada, with this maniacal anime demon face, crawls up behind him.
Yeah.
Omega ducks another Rainmaker and hits a German suplex, but while he can hold his grip, he can't hold a bridge. He hits a second. Okada breaks the third, hits his own, and grabs the wrist. One more Rainmaker ought to do it. Kenny, though, drop steps under it, one more German, one more Poison Rana, but they're both completely exhausted.
Personally, I felt that was a little bit excessive. I know it's incredibly dumb, but it just felt a little bit excessive considering they have just been selling the we are too tired, we can't hit our moves right.
Oh, you know, burst of professional athletes, burst of adrenaline.
Okay.
The V-trigger is countered with the dropkick and a slow, determined Rainmaker is countered with the one-winged angel. They pretty much fall into it, though. Kenny can't even grip Okada's head. It's almost like a mistaken one-winged angel.
I described it as a snap one-winged angel because it doesn't matter that Omega hasn't got him perfectly in position. It's good enough for this moment.
It's kind of, the way I saw it was, he has him up, and of course, in his mind, he has the intent to do it,
yeah.
But the body won't answer in time. And what is actually happening is they are losing balance,
yep.
And Okada just happens to turn over and land in that position when they hit the mat.
Yeah.
They also land far too near the ropes for a pin, but the point is, he has technically hit the move and the damage has been done. Like, it's a 75% one, but it's been he's hit it.
Okada's reaction face here is, oh, it's all kind of everything, but I love it.
Yes. I did like, though, so he's sitting up dazed in the ropes, and Kenny climbs over and up him, pushing off his face to stand up.
Yeah.
The final V-trigger is incredible. If Okada escaped without a concussion, I'll be shocked. It's also straight into that fantastic low wide shot I talked about.
Yeah.
And Kenny's flying legs almost wipe out the cameraman as well.
Oh yeah, it's like the cameraman must be having flashbacks to this at this very moment.
Yeah, yeah. One more one-winged angel, a deep cover, and the entire crowd count along with the three count as Kenny Omega becomes the 66th IWGP Heavyweight Champion. 69 minutes, 49 seconds, including the rest periods. The second longest match in New Japan history, behind the Antonio Inoki, Masa Saito, yeah. 2-hour jungle fight. And the second longest match held indoors in Japan, behind a Billy Robinson versus Jumbo Tsuruta match that went a flat 70 minutes.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. After the match, Okada sells it like he's dead. The Young Bucks show up and embrace with Kenny and Kota. No idea what's going on here. I'm not attached to this story anymore. Ibushi straps the belt onto Omega, somehow not dropping it. And Kenny does the show closing appeal in Japanese, complete with Kenny Omega as the heavyweight champion. Young Bucks are the tag team champions. And Ibushi is my very handsome tag team partner. he then does a speech in English. He gets his breath back far too quickly for a man who's just done that match.
Yep.
And funnily enough, he's much less likable in English. Cody comes out, teases coming down to the ring, and then goes back. There's a shot in the preview video of Cody turning on Kenny and giving him the crossroads. Again, story that I'm no longer attached to.
Yeah.
I skip through the backstage interviews to find the final shot, which is a lone Okada dollar on the stage, fluttering in the light breeze with an empty ring and empty arena in the background. The reign of the Rainmaker is over.
It is magnificent. It is like the perfect image to sum up the end of this reign.
Yeah. I might do this in a slightly different order. This is, of course, the best match of all time. This is the Wrestling Observer Newsletter 7-star match. And 9.78 on Cage Match. I don't know if there's anything bigger than that on Cage Match at the time of recording.
I think their Wrestle Kingdom one is 9.80.
Okay, right. This has been the subject of much discourse over the years. How do you feel about it?
Before I get into that, I just want to quickly point out how the post-match promos, especially the backstage bit, is so funny in hindsight, because you've got Omega promising, saying, I will drive New Japan forwards. This is the evolution of pro wrestling. I see people here that entertain me the most. He promises a lot. And if you've seen his title run, other than the Ishii match, it doesn't deliver. The backstage feels like a veiled advert for AEW, despite the fact that it probably wasn't in the works at this point. But it really does, in hindsight, that whole backstage bit feels like a setup for AEW.
Yeah, I mean, Kenny only gets 3 successful title defenses. The first is against Cody Rhodes in San Francisco. There's the Ishii match. There's the three-way, which New Japan didn't do, really, for the big belt.
Yeah.
Like, not since the one that Nakamura won the belt in.
Yeah.
The way to pin somebody else to get it off Brock. Or Nakamura lost. I'm sure it was Nakamura, Brock, and somebody else.
Yeah, there was a freeway with Brock Lesnar involved.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so Kenny versus Cody and Kota Ibushi at King of Pro Wrestling. And then at the Dome, he loses it to Tanahashi. Yeah. That is Kenny Omega's IWGP heavyweight title run.
And those two matches with Cody in it, bear in mind this match got 7 stars, those two got 4.25. And imagine how not good they have to be for Meltzer to only get 4.25 for an Omega match.
There are many things I like about Cody Rhodes. Just think you are comparing him to Okada here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To come back to my thoughts, you can tell throughout this match that Omega is a guy that puts a stupid amount of thought into his wrestling. Mm. You can see it. You can see it in the callbacks to the previous matches. You can see it in the way they are doing things differently. You can see it in the spots. You can see it in the big counters. The thing is, I would describe this match, I think the best analogy I can think of, it's a movie where the guy, the writer, director, he knows the story he wants to tell. He wants to tell an epic.
Mm.
And there's so many great bits and it's well shot and all of the cinematography is great, all of this. The problem is it's too long and it doesn't hold together.
Interesting. I also used a movie analogy. Have you ever seen any Indian films?
I have not.
Okay, so in India, going to the cinema has always been a big event. Mm. And their blockbusters are 3 hours long, have incredible cinematography, spectacular costumes, intricate fight scenes, romance, song and dance numbers, drama, melodrama, larger-than-life characters clashing. Essentially, if it's fiction, why can't your heroes leap over skyscrapers and wipe out legions of enemies with a single spin kick?
I get that, yeah.
This is the Bollywood blockbuster of wrestling matches to me.
I get that. I mean, I've not seen Bollywood, but from your description, yeah, I get that.
Yeah,
I can see
and
it.
Despite now having watched it twice in a week for this, it's not my favourite and I'm not going to go back to it often, but it's an incredible achievement on an artistic and a technical level.
Oh, agreed. The amount of difficulty level and the amount of effort is, it's incredible.
It's high difficulty level, but it's not Commander or Vikingo like stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's not,
it's normal high-level wrestling moves, but not crazy flippy shit.
Yeah, it's high difficulty because of how much they're doing, the speed they're doing it, the fact that, I mean, what, we've had at least, if there's not 10 Rainmaker counters or evasions in this match, I'm shocked. It feels like there's 10.
It's kind of Kenny playing this like an hour-long fighting game.
Yeah.
Round one, fight, that's your first fall.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, you have a limited move set in terms of what you can do with the controller, what you can do with the buttons.
Mm.
So the Rainmaker counter is going to come up a lot. The One Winged Angel counter is going to come up a lot. You get technical reversals, you know, mid-air throws, the whole thing. This is Kenny playing Tekken with Okada in real life for an hour and 10 minutes.
I really like that as an analogy. And thinking back, I think that sums it up quite nicely. There's so many little elements on their own that I loved, and this is a great achievement. It's just, it kind of lacks that little bit of heart for me. If you're engaged with Kenny Omega, I can see how that is your emotional connection.
Yeah.
I never really was. I appreciated Kenny, but Kenny was never my guy.
Right.
I never had that connection to Omega. And I think it was probably because, especially for the New Japan run, because he's a heel, he's got that unlikable element to him.
Yeah.
And that, and then when it got to his title run, he made certain statements basically calling all the New Japan wrestlers lazy and shit. And it just completely turned me away from him.
Yeah. Interesting. I think in complete contrast to our careers, perhaps, you're a heart wrestling fan and I'm more of a head wrestling fan.
Yeah, I think
whereas you very much have a head job and I very much have a heart job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you. You got anything else?
I have no problem if people absolutely adore this match and think it's one of the best matches of all time. I think it's an incredible achievement.
Mm.
But it's not a match that I would choose to watch, and I honestly will probably never watch this match again. Despite that, it's a great match. but it's a hell of a lot of time to invest. And if I'm going to invest an hour of my time into one match, yep, it's Thunder Queen Battle.
You have also said you don't like going back and watching stuff when you know it's going to go long.
Yeah.
And one of the things I think taking that takes the edge off this is it's no longer the now. Like, we're not in the story.
Mm.
And the ending, knowing the ending takes the edge off it.
Yeah.
Kind of like the match we're going to talk about next week. This is a culmination of a story match.
Yes.
As I kind of mentioned, I think even if you don't like it, you have to respect their timing, their athleticism, and their chemistry.
Completely.
Aside from maybe Kenny and Ibushi, it's hard for me to think of two wrestlers who fit each other better than Kenny and Okada. It's like they were designed to wrestle each other. And with Ibushi, you always have the X factor that he might completely fuck something up and injure himself, whereas Okada is much safer and more reliable.
Mm.
Like, Kenny can plan stuff with both of them. Ibushi might pull it off. Okada will definitely pull it off.
Yeah. Okada is Omega's best opponent. The issue for me is I don't think Omega is Okada's best opponent. I think that Tanahashi 2013-2015 run is my personal preference. And as I say, it's an emotional connection thing.
Mm, yeah, perfect. Perfectly valid criticism. The closest thing to a botch, apart from Red Shoes counting a pin that wasn't happening, is Okada getting a little bit flaily trying to block a slap.
Mm.
Everything else in this is surgical precision. And the wrestlers in it may tell you different, but to an observer, not one single moment of this goes wrong. Remember we talked about the TLC match where it's all going perfectly until Jeff Hardy can't run across the top of the ladders?
Yeah.
There is no moment in this match that is Jeff Hardy running across the top of the ladders. Like, everything goes right. And I understand and appreciate if someone prefers their wrestling a little rougher around the edges. But even now, almost 6 years removed from it and the events around it, I think any arguments against its technical prowess are very straw man. Mm. I am calling this must see, but in the way that I think anyone who calls himself a film fan must see one Bollywood epic in their life.
Okay.
This is classic movie pro wrestling to me. Like I said, it's not my favorite, and I'm not even gonna watch this every year. Mm. But I think every wrestling fan needs to see this once. So I mentioned how this was the 7-star match. I was looking through the Observer. Dave got 993 responses to a Dominion poll. One gave it a thumbs in the middle. One gave it a thumbs down. 20 people thought Jericho versus Naito was better than this.
My God, 20 people need fucking eye surgery.
And one, possibly surnamed Jackson, thought Young Bucks winning the tag belts from Sonata and Evil was better than this on the night. I got a quote from Dave himself. No, I didn't go to him. He wrote it in the Observer. He says, "I've been watching pro wrestling for 48 years consistently. I'm trying to figure out what the odds are that the two greatest individual performances I've ever seen would be in the same match. When it had ended, my thought was, this was the greatest match I've ever seen. Not arguably, and not by a little bit either. It was at a level far beyond when it came to emotion, storytelling, and attention to detail." This was the Wrestling Observer Match of the Year by 2,901 votes over the second place.
What?
And Omega had four more matches in the top 10, and Okada had one more. Omega also won Wrestler of the Year and Most Outstanding, with Okada coming third in both of those categories. New Japan won Promotion of the Year. As I mentioned at the top, Dominion won Major Show of the Year. Mm-hmm. The One Winged Angel was Best Move, Rainmaker second. Gedo was Best Booker, and Takaki Kidani was Best Promoter. Like, possibly just on the back of this match, like, New Japan swept the board, pretty much. But, like, as we've mentioned before, this is the new golden age of New Japan.
Yep.
Sort of coming towards the end of it. This might be the late peak, perhaps. Late spike, maybe, is better than peak, perhaps.
Yeah, at one point I kind of thought, is this the end or is 2019 the end? But it's definitely around this time.
Mm, yeah. There is still good stuff in 2019. Wasn't the Osprey Shingo match we covered was 2019,
yes,
wasn't it? Yeah. So there is still good stuff going on. And I mean, as I've mentioned before, I was at the 2020 Dome Show, and that, back-to-back, the first night, has the two best matches I've ever seen live. So there was still lots of great stuff going on. And also, that is the that night one is the biggest Dome attendance since I don't know when.
Yeah.
Like, that's the last time they cracked 40,000 in that building. So there was still plenty to like about the company. And then, unfortunately, the pandemic happened.
Yep.
Somebody liked Evil too much, and it's all gone a bit weird. So, if we have nothing else to add about Okada versus Omega, we have one more of their quartet to go. But that's a few weeks off yet.
And typically for us, it's the first one.
Yes, yeah. Much like Steamboat and Flair, we've managed to do a classic series in entirely the wrong order. Right, so... we haven't got guests, so I'm completely thrown out my usual routine. You can go to linktr.ee/mustseematches for all the ways to subscribe, links to the full list of nominations, and a whole load more. We are at Musty Matches on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky. We have a Discord, bit.ly/mustseematchesdiscord. I am at Kieran Edits on Twitter, and Mark is...
at monkey_buckles.
As I mentioned earlier on, I have another show. It is called Nothing and Like It, and it chronicles the UK's Frontier Wrestling Alliance's adventures on television. And you can find everything to do with that at linktr.ee/fwapod. Episode 3 is out now, and episode 4 will be out soon, like a week or so. Next week, the highest women's match in our nominations list. Sasha Banks versus Bayley from NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, August the 22nd, 2015. And joining us to discuss that will be Post Wrestling's Karen Peterson. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.